Hey, lovely listeners. I wanted to give you a trigger warning and a heads up that listener discretion is advised on our next series, Victim F. It's not an easy conversation in parts, but we believe it's a really important conversation that we need to have, and so too do Denise and Aaron. So without further ado, here's our interview with Denise and Aaron.
I didn't hurt her. I didn't do any of that.
What surprised you most about the way that police treated him in those hours following Denise's kidnapping?
To see how Aaron Quinn was treated immediately by police, accused of being a killer, being sleep deprived, being asked the same question over and over again. He said, I understand why people falsely confess.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Real Crime Profile. I'm Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, victim advocate, and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service and host of the podcast Crime Analyst. And with me today is...
Hi, I'm Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds and executive producer of Fox's new America's Most Wanted.
And I'm Lisa Zambetti. I'm the casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds. I also have a new project that's debuting on FX called Reservation Dogs. I'm very excited about it. And I have a real interest in real crime and the minds that solve those crimes and the victims of those crimes.
And with us today, we have two very special guests.
I'm Denise Huskins. I'm a physical therapist.
I'm Aaron Quinn. I'm also a physical therapist.
Let's dive in where we left off last time.
They never apologize. That's the other thing that's so shocking. It's even after your offender was apprehended, according, I mean, as far as your book goes, they never apologize. They still tried to maintain that it was all a hoax. I mean, how do those two worlds exist?
They're not only they apologized, their lawyers wrote an apology letter and then they signed it, which basically was not an apology.
The Vallejo Police.
The Vallejo Police Department during our civil case. Unfortunately, too, they gave Detective Mustard Officer of the Year that year.
Yeah, I mean, that's just unbelievable. That just, for Sesma to be promoted and for him to get Officer of the Year, there are so many points where you just think it's unbelievable, where it just gets worse and worse and worse, that for
and
you
I
having
think
lived
that,
it.
That's the difficult position we are now. I mean, your guys' theory that I was really the intended person may very well be, but we are in a position where the same investigators who called it a hoax, who went after Aaron, wasn't just Agent Sesma, but there was Agent French, who had been a polygraph examiner for what?
20 years.
20 years. So it wasn't just him by himself. It was all these people who were the same people after Mueller was caught and then say, oh, he just did it by himself, case closed. And so looking at it from the outside, that may very well be, but how do we know? Because we can't trust the people who actually had the evidence at their hands and investigated that they did it correctly. So we will never know if they followed the leads that they needed to. One way or another, the fact is we just have to sit with the unknown. And
well, that's not necessarily true. One, the case could be reopened, seeing as I'm assuming there is a state attorney general that could usurp jurisdiction, because even though it happened in a city and in a county, the state can actually step in and do an investigation. So I would ask your attorneys to approach the attorney general for your state and see if they could open an investigation into accomplices. And it's also very possible for you to file a suit. I don't know about the statute of limitations now, so I'm not sure, but you can certainly file a federal, if it's within the statute of limitations, a federal civil rights violation case against the police department for what they did to you. And for the fact that they had the information available to them to rescue you and they failed to do that, that they violated your civil rights in doing that. And it sounds like there may be an aspect to it that they treated you differently because you're a woman and you didn't. First, they claimed that Aaron killed you. And then when they found out you were still alive, they didn't believe you. And mm-hmm. It sounds like some of the statements that were made, like this asinine statement about women will make up things to relive the excitement of the ordeal, to me, that's just outrageous. I don't know if you know, but I was sexually victimized when I was a kid. And I did have the detective first grade who was actually an experienced expert in the field of child sexual victimization. He asked me, well, did you ever just tell him no?
Oh, God.
And I literally, luckily at that time, I was a prosecutor. I was 10 years older than when it happened. And I stopped him cold. And I said, don't ever ask that of anybody who's gone through what I went through. Don't ever. That is the wrong thing to do. And you know better than that. He goes, yeah, but I thought I could ask you since you are professional. And I said, I'm still a human being.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that was what was asked of me. Like, did you ever ask him to release you? Well, let's see. The position I was in, I really don't think that if I asked straight up, can you just let me go?
It's outrageous. It's ignorant.
That would have changed anything.
Yeah. I'm sure he would assume that you wanted to be released.
Let me tell you this. There's absolutely nothing to be gained by asking that question of you. Mm-hmm. If you're lying and made it all up, of course you could say that. You're telling the truth, which is why you would say, no, I didn't ask him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it just confirms the truth of it. If you had been lying, you would have expected you to say that you had said that. The fact that you say, no, I didn't, I mean, is another corroboration of the fact that you were victimized. It's such ignorance. I mean, again, I'm professionally embarrassed by the fact that those two agents were able to do what they did to you.
I think that brings up a good point. I mean, again, the Gone Girl thing. I mean, I was blaming myself and going back, like, should I have acted this way? Should I have been more emotional? Should I this or that? Like, sitting there for the SART exam with my legs up on the table, they're taking pictures of me and wondering if my body is going to betray me. And they're just going to use whatever they find in this exam to turn against me, which of course they did. In the FBI affidavit, they said there was no signs of non-consensual sex, whatever that means. When I told them specifically, no, I didn't fight back because I'm drugged. I've been taken from my home. I don't know where I was at. And I hadn't read the book. I didn't see the movie. I didn't know anything about this Gone Girl thing. And I finally watch it 9 months after. And I see what she did. And she like hits herself in the hammer or in the face with a hammer and brutalizes herself internally to make it look like there's rape.
Exactly.
And then she dramatically falls in Ben Affleck's arms at the end in front of all the cameras. And I'm going, it doesn't matter what I did. If I acted this way, they would have said, that's why. If I acted the way I did, they would say this. So I was in a lose-lose situation from.
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, because I also taught deception detection at the FBI Academy and around the country. And clearly, the fact that Aaron, for 18 hours, they tried to batter you emotionally into a confession, and you stuck to your guns and you told the same story over and over and over again in great detail. And then Denise, when you came back, you confirmed everything. The fact that you had been through so much and recounted it in such great detail, of course, it's more difficult. It's much more difficult. The simpler the lie, the easier it is to keep it going. But you were able to keep that going 18 hours and then days later. And yet they still questioned the veracity when all of the things that you did are indicators of veracity. So clearly these are not well-educated investigators. Clearly these are people with an agenda. And it's just, it's an aberration. And like you said, I love the FBI and it's filled with incredibly bright and dedicated people, as is Scotland Yard, as is most of the law enforcement agencies across this country. But there are some people who do really stupid, ignorant things, and they have no business, as Laura said, being in our business.
That's difficult. One of the more difficult things to move past is the lack of accountability for these officers. We understand that people make mistakes, but I could understand them going after me a little too long, thinking that I killed her, but not doing any sort of investigation is unexcusable. To double down saying it's a hoax is unexcusable. To promote these guys or award them is unexcusable. And it keeps that culture of insulating bad officers. And I imagine there are officers in Vallejo, and there's probably agents that work with SESMA who will hear this and be infuriated. But do they have the power to hold anyone accountable? And the city council of Vallejo fought us in the civil lawsuit that we had. They haven't fired anybody. They haven't changed policies. They haven't done anything, despite even Detective Mustard lying on sworn statements during a civil case. And that's the difficult part. And that we hope through our book that maybe people will read it and be as frustrated as you guys, and maybe we'll move the needle forward and give opportunities for more accountability, because we're lucky that we're able to endure what we went through. We have each mm-hmm. other. We have our families. We had the money to hire lawyers, as Denise said. Not many people have that. And not many people can endure 18 hours of interrogation. Not many people can endure kidnapping. One of our primary goals to write this is that to hopefully give some other people strength, because we've gotten a lot of strength from other survivors, and maybe bring some awareness, because awareness is the first stage of change.
Oh, that's great. I think that's a really auditory goal.
Yeah, magnanimous of you.
We're all trying to stay in shape and eat right, and Freshly can help. Their delicious meals are designed by nutritionists and cooked by chefs, so it's easier to eat better. And what's really great is the meals are delivered fresh to your door. No cooking necessary. I mean, grocery shopping, preparing food, then cooking it takes a lot of time. But with Freshly, you don't have to do any of that. Meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. And ordering is easy. Visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 great, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, protein-packed chicken parmesan, and there's so many more. And they taste great. And right now, our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every single night and start living life Freshly. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/realcrime. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to Freshly.com/realcrime. For $40 off your first two orders, that's Freshly.com/realcrime. For $40 off your first two orders.
I'm really excited to share my new project with you, The First Wife, John Meehan's Reign of Terror, a new podcast launching on July 22nd on Audible, building on the success of the hit podcast Dirty John, which was created by Wondery and the LA Times in 2017. The First Wife podcast is a reinvestigation into John Meehan's behaviour by Tonya Bells, his first wife of 10 years. Join us as we uncover new insights into John Meehan's life and never-before-released recordings of John Meehan, long-held secrets from his former friends and acquaintances, as well as accounts from colleagues and close family members. Accompanying each episode of The First Wife are bonus installments hosted by me, Laura Richards, as I take a deeper dive with Tonya Bells into the episode's events and the long-awaited psychological autopsy into the mind of John Meehan. New information and accounts from the people who knew John best bring us closer to the truth, answering crucial questions. Why did John make the choices that he did? What was the impetus of his coercively controlling behavior? And ultimately, was John Meehan a psychopath? The First Wife is narrated by Rachel Louise Snyder, investigative journalist for The New Yorker and award-winning author of No Visible Bruises, What We Don't Know About Domestic Violence Can Kill Us. The First Wife was created and executive produced by me, Laura Richards, Elisa Rosen, and Tonya Bells. Take a listen to the trailer.
A marriage that was supposed to last forever.
And she said, oh, is this his sister? And I said, no, this is his wife. And she said, I slept with John last night.
You enjoy your time left on this earth, okay?
Before the world knew about Dirty John, there was Tanya Meehan's 10-year nightmare.
John is a stalker. John is a terrorist.
He said, "My goal in life is to slay as many women as I possibly can."
A family in danger.
He said, "Tanya, he might take hostages, and I want you to hide until we find him."
And I'm thinking, boy, am I going to have to crush John Meehan's skull with this hatchet?
Tanya reinvestigates her past with those who knew John best.
I said, "You left me, you stole drugs, and you killed your brother. I know everything."
With shocking new claims, Tanya realizes this may never be over.
"I'm pretty certain I'm your older half-brother."
It hurts so bad, and in a way, it makes me understand that I never had anything. I never had it.
This is The First Wife, John Meehan's Reign of Terror, only on Audible.
Every moment in captivity, I kept picturing him. I kept just visualizing what that feeling must be like to finally feel safe in his arms again.
I don't think you're both lucky. I think what happened is absolutely outrageous. And I know what you're saying in terms of surviving it, but you should never have had this experience. And it doesn't just let bad officers get away with it. It allows them to victimize other people, but it also allows other bad guys to do bad things to other people. These are miscarriages of justice, and people should never stay silent when those things happen. So I think it's a real testament to both of you, to your strength and your courage and your power. And I love the fact you finished the book with a Brené Brown quote, who I'm a huge fan of. But the trauma that you experienced, both of you, at the hands of the police, at the hands of the perpetrators, the fact that really at no point, bar one, that I could see in the book, were you ever treated as human beings. And there was no empathy, no compassion, no care. Even Denise, when you're going through your examination, there was only really one nurse who said to you, "You'd be making impossible decisions." She actually acknowledged what you've been going through. But I'm just appalled by it, quite frankly, for there to be no human element to it in terms of how you were both treated the whole way through and are still fighting to this day. I think it's just unconscionable.
I agree with you. We've always, unfortunately, been viewed as a problem. And it is a real tragedy because we were desperately trying to get these guys caught, and they did attack another family, and that family had to go through their own trauma. And I don't know how they're handling that, to have someone break in their home and fight for your life. But there was an officer, Detective Misty, who didn't know us at the time,
right?
But went above and beyond. And
what a heroine.
Yeah, she's our hero. Without her, our names would never have been cleared. We would never have an opportunity to get back to work or write this book, or I don't know where we would be at in our lives. But she found Mueller's phone at the Dublin home invasion that was similar to ours, and then tracked it up to South Lake Tahoe, and then eventually connect them to our crime. And so as bad as Vallejo police and the FBI acted, we have the exact opposite in Misty. And
she's a woman. I mean, that strikes me right away. I mean,
face as a detective. And we're fortunate that she came to our wedding. And she came to our baby shower. We were able to go to her baby shower, and I believe we're going to be lifelong friends. So
it's awesome.
Yeah. So there's a nice bookend to polar opposites of police work in this. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm glad that she did her job. But the one thing I'll say as former law enforcement is that you should just do your job. It's not, wow, isn't this incredible that she actually investigated the case, and she actually, and I don't want to take away from her because I don't know her, by the way, and I'm sure as a human being, there's lots of amazing attributes to her. And I know you're both professional carers as well. But I always used to say, and still do when I train, just do your job, do the basics well. You're not asking for anything over and beyond that. So when you get such bad service, and then on the other hand, you get someone, when I was running my stalking advocacy service as a CEO, you'd get someone who just did their job. You elevate them to hero status. And I would always say, we just have to be careful here, because we just want people to do what they're paid to do, to bleed victims. to be trauma informed, to know that if someone's gone through something traumatic, there are certain ways of asking questions, and you must be trauma informed if you're working with victims. And I take my hat off to both of you. I know you've trained as victim advocates as well, and you're both PT, physical therapy, and trauma resides in the body and it manifests physiologically, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. And I'm so glad you're using all of your skill sets to help other people, but it just should never have happened. And that's the thing that makes me so angry, and just why I felt Nikki knew how I would feel about the case. In fact, she'd mentioned both of you to me before, and I really wanted to understand more of what happened. But I think you both show tremendous humility, and I'm sure it's been a journey, and now you're married and you've got a little daughter and you've got your whole lives ahead of you, and you're helping other people. And that's real testament to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Misty always says that she was just doing her job, but we don't let her be that humble about it.
Yeah. Yeah. She tells me volumes, actually. That speaks volumes that she is an incredible person, because she's not like bigging it up and showing, oh, I'm an incredible detective. That tells me that actually she's got humility. And she knows what it's about.
She did her job and then had to overcome the fact that the Vallejo police were still not doing their job. And so she had to do their job for them too. And that's going above and beyond. And that's a good thing. She didn't know how this was going to all play out and how incredibly important it would be to your lives. And she did it despite the fact that it could have been a false lead. She did it anyway. And that's important. And this book is a good lesson for law enforcement as well. I mean, a very good lesson, because hopefully people will read it and understand that, yeah, humans make mistakes, but they don't have to keep making those mistakes compounded and compounded and risk people's lives because of it. So please, I love law enforcement. I spent my entire career doing it, and I think it's a laudable profession, and I know Laura feels the same way. But we also feel that when people step out of line in law enforcement, that they should be held accountable. I hope that one day you'll be able to get that accountability from those people, or at least significant change from those people.
And accountability is so important. I talk on Crime Analyst, my other podcast, about it all the time, because I've been part of so many reviews of cases that have gone horribly wrong. And it's one thing to apologize, and I've worked with many officers who have apologized when they've got things wrong. But the key part for law enforcement is actually understanding what went wrong and then changing. And it's that change behavior of what are you going to do differently, and how do you then look at an organization and the people within it, top down and bottom up, to ensure that the lessons are really learned. Well, I'd highly recommend everyone reads your book, whether you're law enforcement in the UK, in America, wherever you are, Australia, we have listeners all over the world, to read the book to understand there are so many different points where we can learn from both of you being so honest. And it's actually your honesty, some of the things you didn't have to share, which tells me about your authenticity, because there are points where you are so transparent in what happened, the good and the bad things, where Aaron, you said, well, I felt shame from saying this or doing this or feeling this, and the same with you, Denise. And I think that that's also where the true learning happens, and it can't have been easy to put it all down on paper. And I guess one of my last questions is, actually going through that process, was it cathartic in any way, or was it just a lot of pain going through the writing process with Nikki?
I mean, it was more than anything empowering and cathartic, definitely. And it was a, I think, unique way to process and heal, to be able to sit with each moment and release it from our minds and our bodies, and literally put pen to paper and be in a safe place to really look back and go, what was I feeling at the time? And those moments of going, oh, should I have done something different? And going, well, no, I mean, that was the best thing for me to do to survive. So we were able to kind of find closure in certain parts of that experience.
Yeah, I think it was important for us to tell the truth, and even warts and all, because our trauma was hijacked. I think if we had just gone through the kidnapping, it would have been a horrible moment in our lives. It would have been the worst moment in our lives. But I think we would have been able to potentially get through it a little bit sooner. But to have that degradation and destruction of our reputation and our worldview of, I grew up thinking when you're in trouble, go to the police, and that got shattered. But we didn't want to pretend that we're flawed human beings just like everyone else. And we want to make sure it was a really victim-centric story from our eyes. And that's what you get is our my point of view, Denise's point of view, going back and forth. And for us, it was healing. There's actually, in a way, there's like a physical representation. I can like sit on the bookshelf and I can kind of feel a little bit of less emotional charge with it, because I know it's there and it's our work.
Absolutely.
And just thank you guys for this platform. And we really appreciate you guys taking time reading the book. We hope that.
Oh, thank you for giving us the honor and the opportunity.
G'day folks, Dino here from Lisa's other passion, which is the Killer Casting Podcast. Now, if you're a Real Crime Profile fan and a fan of true crime, you might also have your favorite film and television shows related to crime, and that's what we cover on Killer Casting. This week, we sat down with Nash Edgerton, the director and co-creator of the stunning Australian crime series Mr. In Between, which in the US is playing on FX and FX on Hulu. Now, as excited as we were to talk to Nash, it turns out that his wife Carla was even more excited that he was talking to the Lisa Zambetti from Real Crime Profile. Yes, folks, Carla is a huge fan of the show, so shout out to Carla. Thank you for listening and supporting RCP. It was a bunch of fun, really interesting, and just one of four interviews that we did with the cast and crew of Mr. In Between. Check out the show on FX and subscribe to Killer Casting to listen to this amazing interview. And now, it's back to Real Crime Profile.
The city of Vallejo settled a civil lawsuit with the couple for $2.5 million. The Vallejo Police Department has never publicly apologized to the couple until now. In an emailed statement writing, quote, "The Huskins-Quinn case was not publicly handled with the type of sensitivity a case of this nature should have been handled with. And for that, the city extends an apology to Ms. Huskins and Mr. Quinn." Vallejo Police Chief Shawnee Williams writes in part, quote, "What happened to Ms. Huskins and Mr. Quinn is horrific and evil. As the new chief of police, I am committed to making sure survivors are given compassionate service with dignity and respect."
I knew our lives had changed forever and that we were kind of go through a lot more struggles, but like we're together and we can
at least you had each other.
Yeah, at least had each other now.
And I will say that I had written my story down and never intended to publish it because I just thought it was so personal. But then once I did write it down, it just became so much more finite. And wow, it's manageable. And wow, I can put this out there and hopefully help people with it. So it's so great to hear that same experience with you, because you are helping people, definitely. Not only will we use it, Laura and I and Lisa, to help educate people, but there will be many, many people who read this and who have gone through similar experiences, and they'll feel more the courage and the incredible fortitude that you have, and it'll give them encouragement.
They'll feel understood. It's such a generous thing for you to put that all out there. Absolutely.
And it's also nice to hear people as pissed about that, like some of the other stuff is people aren't as forthcoming, which I appreciate you being as mad at the FBI.
I'm sure Laura is just as mad and Lisa is just as mad. They just don't express it the same way I do.
Yeah.
Well, yes, and unless, I mean, I rarely swear and I rarely curse, but I was incredibly angry reading literally page by page that anger. It never dissipated. It just got worse and worse. And living through that, just we can talk about it. Jim and I have worked many, many cases and we can talk about it. And Jim does sound on the mic more angry, but I certainly don't want you to think that I'm not angry about what happened, because I do.
Laura's
think
very
that,
polite. She's from London. They're a little more polite than people from the Bronx, but I embrace my heritage.
Well, Laura, the professionals involved really
was great.
Really should not be getting promoted or be being made Officer of the Year when something like this has happened. And that accountability, I can understand why that would be so difficult to sit with. I don't think I could be and show as much humility as you both have, having lived through an experience like this. And yes, we all know there are good people who work in all professions, but when we do come across people who are bad apples, there's scrutiny, there are units set up to deal with those individuals, because this is about corruption. It's not just about doubling down. It's about, actually, Aaron, you could be in prison now, quite frankly, and Denise, you could have been raped and killed, and that could have been the outcome. And thank goodness it wasn't. Thank goodness we're looking at your wonderful faces and you're married and you've got a beautiful child and things turned out differently. But that doesn't mean to say the psychological scars aren't there and the trauma that gets triggered. And it's life work that you have to keep working through, when actually, Denise, you could have been found within 24 hours. It didn't have to be this way. And that's genuinely what makes me so angry, that if people just do their jobs, you do the basics well, as I always say, the rest will follow. So using coercion and understanding that victims suffer that, why were you being interrogated right from the start as a suspect? Why did the police go into the house and start asking questions as if this was all manufactured by you, rather than having an open mind and seeing your brother, and just have numerous different lines of inquiry, lines of investigation, which is what you do right from the start.
Yeah.
So yes.
We just needed basic work, and they would have been, you know, heroes in the public's eye, and they should have been if they just did basic work. It's really, I don't know how to put it, but it's just so disappointing to have them.
Well, thank you for
the opposite.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having the character that both of you have, and for actually doing something good out of something that was horrific. And again, we're sorry that you had to suffer through both levels of that horrific case, but we're very happy that you're here and you're speaking out, and you're going to go down in history as people who are very, very, very strong, and you're thriving, and you're also helping so many people. So thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, and a note to the media, don't always accept the things that you're told. Question, challenge, corroborate. Is that the media also play a role in this? Mm-hmm. And Lisa and Denise, you referenced Gone Girl. And again, that narrative has no place in a case like this. So to our media colleagues who listen to the podcast, again, it's another prime example. We saw it with Meredith Kircher, that you should be questioning. And not just accepting narratives and promulgating false narratives about people. It's wrong. And as journalists, you're meant to have inquiring minds, investigative minds. So I know you did have some good journalists, local journalists, and there's probably some unsung heroes that we haven't talked about. And I did want to give a nod to Judge Nunley, who did understand what had happened, and I think in some ways gave you your dignity back. I might be overstepping and overreaching by saying that, but I think the judge made some good decisions and understood from your impact statements just how traumatic it had been for you.
Yeah, I mean, both the probation officer who was assigned to the case, and then the judge, absolutely. It allowed us to get a little hope back in the justice system. So there's a lot of scars there, but I hope to see more and more of that. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, for our listeners, please go and buy the book. You can buy the physical copy, or you can listen to it on Audible. Where else can they get copies? On Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon or in the major outlets. They can go to victimf.com, find book through there. It's also on a Kindle edition as well.
Awesome.
Excellent. And there's a 2020 special, isn't there, that people can watch?
That should be on Hulu now, because it aired on June 4th.
Excellent. And we'll put it in our show notes as well. So I could talk to you for hours, by the way, and I know we've been on for quite a long time, so it's probably exhausting for you. But Jim, Lisa and I really do thank you for taking this time to speak with us. And we're happy to continue the discussion if there are any other further questions that come up and you want to push for the reinvestigation or whatever the next steps are, and you want to have a discussion, we'll be happy to. So just know that you've got some friendlies who are happy to continue the discussion. So thank you so much for speaking out. Thank you for advocating. Thank you for helping others. And thank you for the work that you do in your physical therapy world of incorporating your knowledge around trauma as well. And for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing out.
If you like deeper analysis like this episode on topics like Making a Murderer, Mindhunter, Escape at Dannemora,
the case of Sally Challen, the teacher's pet, Lynette Dawson, the Exonerated Five, and When They See Us, and the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, you can listen to RCP on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on. And please be sure, if you like what we do, to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile. Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107. Or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 200 0247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214-946-4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.